Coming up on this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast, we kick things off with Carl and Jason recounting their stories of how they fell in love with Star Wars. Then we turn to you as we start working our way through some of our Larian inquiries. So sit back, relax, and watch out for Wampas. Welcome to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, have been frozen upside down to the cave ceiling with nothing to do but talk all things Star Wars. So make yourselves comfortable, but keep a wary eye out for trouble here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 121. You love me? I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me we have the Kanan Jarrus to my Kit Fisto. We have Carl LeClaire.
Oh, hey, Jason. Oh, of course, you're always smiling, and you do smell a little fishy.
A little
just
bit.
That's weird. Oh, I'm sorry, Jason. Oh, man. Oh, I'm glad you just called me Kanan. I just watched the Rebels finale right before we started recording again. Mm-hmm. So, oh, hello, Kit. Jason's got his Kit Fisto Gentle Giant Man in front of me.
Yes.
I'm very excited to record tonight, Jason. I'm always excited. I've been on like a Star Wars kick lately, which is good because
yes.
There was about a month period there where it wasn't like I disliked Star Wars, but I just kind of everybody listening right now definitely has those experiences where it kind of your love of Star Wars cools. Not love of Star Wars, but you're just like your
excitement.
Your excitement and your investment cools at times. And that's where mine had been for a little while. And then Rebels really kicked it back into gear, especially with that finale last week. And actually, in the last week, I've watched The Empire Strikes Back. I listened to Return of the Jedi at work. And I started the Empire Strikes Back radio drama. And I started the new Heir to the Jedi book last night.
Nice!
Yeah, so I've been a bit into Star Wars again. It's real nice.
Just a bit.
Just a bit to be back at it. And also, actually, the primary kicker off of the reignition of my passion is thanks to Jason and thanks to a great, 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 fantastic podcast, Star Wars podcast called My Star Wars Story. If you haven't listened to this, listen. It is phenomenal.
Yes.
The host, his name is Scott. I can't remember his last name.
I think it's Scott Rifen.
Scott Rifen, yes. Scott is doing a fantastic job. He basically just has people on talking about how they got into Star Wars and how, like, basically it's been with them through their lives, what it was like growing up with Star Wars. So far, all the ones I've listened to are people that were alive during the OT, which was really cool to listen to those stories. So if you like hearing stories about how people love Star Wars, you got to check out this show. Like, it just totally relit my Star Wars candle, and it's a fantastic show. We're hoping to get Scott on here very soon. I've been in communication with him. Really nice guy. He's agreed to coming on the lair, which is really cool. So we're
trying to schedule something.
Yeah. He's got Steve Glosson on his third episode too.
Yes. I was about to say that for fans of the Wampa's Lair, you know, Steve Glosson, he's on episode 3. So,
yes.
Steve is a hoot.
He is a hoot.
Although I think I have to say my favorite episode is episode 7 with Consetta Parker, because she's like living a Star Wars fairy tale.
Right.
It's unreal and kind of awesome.
I haven't listened to hers yet, but I'm looking forward to it. And this is just a great show. So that show definitely kind of relit my love of Star Wars. Just listening to those other people's stories, it's just so cool, so fun.
Yes.
And as a result, that kind of affected our show tonight.
A little bit.
Because our topic is, you love me? We're going to be talking about how, Jason and I are just going to talk a little bit about how we knew we were in love with Star Wars. When did we kind of realize it? And just like, what kind of cemented that in our lives? Because if you guys don't know this, we're 121 episodes deep into a over 3-year running podcast on just Star Wars.
Yeah.
So you might say we're a bit invested.
Just a touch.
Just a little bit, about the size of an Ugnaught. You know what I'm saying?
Or a space slug, you know.
Yes. This is no cave.
It's my fandom.
Oh, man. But we will be closing out tonight's episode with a few of your Larian inquiries, because we have not gotten to any in a few episodes. So we wanted to tackle a few of those because we've got some great ones. So we want to make sure to give that due diligence.
Yes. But before we get there, we have a matchup that we've been putting off for way too long.
It's been a while, Jason.
Yeah.
You know.
It's been quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
That was a matchup given to us by one of the Larians, Jeffrey Beaumont, who suggested we do this team matchup. And just to refresh your memories, Team Jason consisted of R2-D2, Zeb Aurelius, Jar Jar Binks, Hondo Onaka, Cad Bane, and Mara Jade as the Emperor's Hand. And Carl, what was Team Carl?
Team Carl was Han Solo, Chewbacca, Boba Fett, Dash Rendar, General Grievous, and Embo, everybody's favorite bounty hunter, and Kitty. My poor little Embo. My cat is in the hospital overnight tonight, so I grabbed my Embo action figure so that I was not alone while I podcasted tonight. And you're all thinking, wow, what a weirdo. He's missing his cat, and he's a dude. But whatever. Don't judge me.
Everybody misses their pet if it's at the vet.
Yeah, he's my man. He's my little man. Everybody misses their pet at the vet. Don't you know it? You do.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. Huh?
Well,
Jason.
Yes.
Ooh. He chews. Hey, yep. No. I told me Toby Di Chi. A rupee. Ho. Ha. Obviously, I don't know the words.
Yawa. Each up. Yawa.
You're right.
I don't know the words either.
Yep. You were right.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry,
impromptu
everyone.
Impromptu dance break.
But yes, this is such an awesome idea. And I believe, Jeffrey, thank you for this extremely cool, fun, original idea. We had a lot of fun with it. And you guys did too, it looks like, which is awesome.
Yes.
So Jason, I don't know how you organized that, my friend, but I'm going to hand it over to you.
All right. Well, basically, folks, Carl and I do not have votes in this matchup because it's Team Jason and Team Carl, and obviously we're voting for, you know, the other person.
Right. I think Jason should win.
Yeah, well, I think Carl should win. I don't know.
Well, let's compile a team and have them fight it out then.
Okay, fine. So we won't be weighing in on this, but this is what everybody else said. Jeffrey Beaumont, who gave us the matchup, says, Jason's team wins. Sorry, Carl. R2-D2 has the radar. Jar Jar is the distraction / cannon fodder / dumb luck. Bane, Hondo, and Zeb are the frontline fighters, and Mara Jade is the quiet fighter. Plus, redheads are great fighters. The fight will be very close with only one survivor, R2-D2. Dash, Boba, and Embo are great line fighters, but Han and Chewie are better fighters with the Falcon, and Grievous runs when losing. Roger Peroni, Team Jason, because Jar Jar would unknowingly kick some butt. Plus, his other members would all combine their different strengths to overwhelm the opposing team. Cody Murphy says the only survivor would be R2-D2. Only R2-D2. Brian V. Klein says, at first it looks pretty even to me, but having both Hondo and Cad Bane on the same team sways my vote to Team Jar Jar. I mean, Jason. Very funny. Kyle Avery, Kyle Baca, who will be with us at Celebration Anaheim, says, sorry, Jason, I love Zeb, Hondo, and Cad Bane, but Jar Jar would get in the way in the fight. Besides, Carl picked Chewie, so Kyle Baca has to go with Team Carl. Let the Wookiee win. Ruddy Jazz says, sorry, Carl, but this goes to Team Jason. Cad Bane and Hondo alone are a deadly duo, especially my boy Cad. Jar Jar would kick some ass, think the major threat would be Grievous, but Bane has experience battling Jedi, so should manage just fine against a mechanical beast like the General. Randy Giles, this matchup is a rather difficult one to determine, I must admit. In the end, I will have to give the overall edge to Team Carl. My reasoning behind this is the team consists mainly of sharpshooters and sound strategic minds. Not to mention Han Solo is the luckiest scoundrel in the galaxy, even more so than Jar Jar's dumb luck. Now, if Lando was on the opposite team, Han and Lando would wash in terms of luck. Each character pretty much watches to a degree, just have to go with strategy in the end, which, as I said before, Carl's team has strong strategic minds. Justin Montez, Team Carl has my money. Between Grievous's tactical and Solo's smoothness, not to mention Boba Fett is the ultimate bounty hunter, it's not even close. I will say, though, this only depends if they're all forced to work together. Lyle Ketchum says, Misa be picking Team Jason. Michael Cohen says, I'm giving this one to Jason because Carl couldn't be bothered to pick at least one female for his team. That's a little unfair, Cohen. Possibly, but...
He's Canadian.
He's Canadian.
That's that. You don't need any other explanation. Sorry to all our Canadian listeners. This message brought to you by an extremely arrogant American.
Joey Letson. Before this battle begins, Lucasfilm PR steps in to show a press release stating that all previous EU is now legend status. Dash and Mara then dissolve like Marty McFly's hand. Team Jason is able to win this one. Jar Jar has shown himself to be indestructible. Jar Jar will fall on something accidentally that ends up blowing up the other team. Don't ask me how, it just happens. Nothing can kill Jar Jar. Joe Mignano says, Team Jason. Jar Jar is the perfect distraction to keep Team Carl busy, while Team Jason outflanks and pulverizes Team Carl into oblivion. Besides, with Jar Jar on your side, you can always have him vote emergency powers to the Supreme Chancellor and have a clone army created as backup.
God. You freaking nail it.
I love doing Joe's voice. We have two more here. On Twitter, at rdizzy says, I'd put all my Republic credits on Carl's team. Hashtag Team Carl.
Ooh, I got a hashtag.
You got a hashtag.
Oh, hashtag giddy up.
Oh, by the way, Mark Herleman said, can I just go team... hashtag Team Carson because he didn't want to pick. So, and finally, an email from our buddy Lenny Klein says, I have to say both these teams are stacked. It's a hard decision to be sure, but here's what I'd say. The Han and Friends is locked in an epic blaster and hand-to-hand showdown with Mara and the gang. Grievous and Mara would probably end up duking it hand-to-hand out for an eternity. Hondo and Cad Bane versus Han and the rest of his friends, Embo, Dash, etc., would play dirty. It would be long and bloody, and not to be morbid, but I sincerely think Han and friends would win, eliminating all the opposition, but at the price of their own lives. Bane, Hondo, and Mara wouldn't go without taking at least one or more of the enemy with each of them. They're just, from a cinematic and tactical point of view, too tough to keep down. In conclusion... It would end with a mortally wounded Mara, with the classic blood running down the corners of her mouth, quietly cursing out Han and friends who are busy tending to a wounded Chewie, and then the camera would do a close-up on a remote button in her hand being pushed, and then a loud explosion caused by some ordnance hidden by Mara. The next shot would be a close-up of an elegant fire consuming the dried brush around the battlefield, followed by a somber John Williams score as the screen slowly fades to black.
You got a movie.
No, we got a little movie there. It was kind of awesome. But that gives us a final Larian tally. And this shocked me, to be perfectly honest. A final Larian tally of 9 for Team Jason and 5 for Team Carl.
I got whooped.
To be perfectly honest, I thought I'd get a few sympathy votes. But that with Han, Chewie, and Boba Fett, you'd get everything else.
You know what, Jason?
What?
Who's scruffy looking?
Evidently, I am. Oh, man. I got walloped.
I am shocked, to be perfectly honest.
I love you.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
That was really loud. Sorry.
It was. But I'm okay.
Sorry. I'd like to play sometimes.
But yeah, I was a little shocked, to be perfectly honest. What is your opinion of the matchup?
Well, I think people are being far too generous about Jar Jar. The idea is to take this seriously, and like in the real seriousness, Jar Jar would be dead. So I found that a little ridiculous. I feel like we almost owe Jar Jar versus like a Darth Sidious matchup just to see how people think he fares against Darth Sidious. I don't know. No, but When some of the early votes came in, I'm like, oh, Jason's definitely going to win this because people evidently seem to be very sympathetic to Jar Jar. So
I was shocked.
But yeah, hey, I don't. It is what it is. I think they were both really, minus like Jar Jar and maybe minus my maybe Grievous. I feel like these teams were very well matched, though, right? Like mm-hmm. we both had like. I mean, I am not a Cad Bane fan. I know people love Cad Bane. I think he is the most overrated bounty hunter, even compared to Boba Fett.
No, Boba Fett, most overrated bounty hunter in Star Wars history.
Boba Fett is the most overrated clone bounty hunter. But if we go with Joe Hogan's idea of the fact that Boba Fett was just Jango's son, not his clone, which is lame, and he doesn't say, no good to me, dead. Boba Fett was way cooler when he said, he's no good to me, dead. You know, when he could actually say the word dead. He was a dead eye instead of a dead eye. Hello, Jedi. Sorry. But yeah, no. I love. I think Boba, you know, people were shouting out your Cad Bane Hondo duo. I mean, in my opinion, they don't stand a chance against Boba Fett and Embo. But that's my opinion. That's my opinion. My opinion did not win. And I shall accept my losses.
Well, and I shall graciously accept my shot.
Dash
Rendar win.
Would shoot all of them dead in like 3 seconds. He's like the best blaster fighter in the galaxy. But as somebody did say, he no longer exists, along with Mara Jade.
Right. So, but yeah. We will actually be getting back to our polls at the end of the show, so stick around for that. But let's jump into our topic.
Okay. That was the sound of splashing. Boing. Did you hear it?
Splunk. Yes.
Oh, are we going spelunking?
Splunk. Splunk. Splunk.
Expect a lot of gunfire in those caves, Mr. Wayne. It's from Batman Begins. What do you need them for? Splunking.
Splunk.
K diving. Expecting a lot of fire. Expecting a lot of gunfire in those caves, Mr. Wayne. Sorry, we're not here to discuss Batman. Get out of here with that trash talk.
Gosh. Shut up.
Oh, good.
There we go.
Oh, where's Joe Hogan now? Oh, man. He would have loved that, Jason. You did the shut up. Hold on.
That's
from
Ghostbusters,
it?
Right?
Oh, yeah. Jason, of course. Is that
it's been
from,
a while since I've seen Ghostbusters.
That's from
Sorry.
Ghostbusters. That's like, where the hell is it? Oh, my gosh. Did I lose it? No. I could not have lost this. Where are you? Oh, here we go.
Shut up!
Okay, sorry. Anyway, yes, let's get into our topic.
Yes.
Jason.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
Here's what I was thinking.
Okay, what were you thinking?
I was thinking, this is actually a really, I actually had some trouble with this, to be honest. Because for me, this is something that I just kind of fell in love with.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very natural progression, you know, almost like a good woman. They're your friend first, then you get like to become really close friends, maybe your best friend, and then all of a sudden you're just like, wow, I'm in love with this person. And it was just like a very natural progression. It wasn't like love at first sight with me in Star Wars necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
It was like at first sight, like,
oh yeah,
and like. I think both of our exposure, Jason, and I don't want to speak for you. I'll let you say your own thing. But I think both of our exposures was initiated by toys. Because I believe your story is like you saw a Y-Wing at a Walmart or something, right?
I saw a Star Wars Micro Machines set in the sporting goods section at a Walmart. Said sporting Star goods. Wars, I'll never like Star Wars, shoved it to the back of the shelf, and walked away. So... I mean, what I don't understand, you know. 2 weeks later, then of course, my parents took me to go see the special editions, A New Hope, and my dad and my mom would tell you that I fell in love with it right there. I wouldn't have known it, but my dad remembers looking over at me at one point during the movie, and I'm just like engrossed and enthralled, and nothing has like made that big of a difference or like. Impacted me that much ever to this point. I was 7 at the time. So my dad would tell you what happened right there. And to some extent, I would probably say yes. But Star Wars made it into my rotation of things to play, either with toys or, you know, just as me as the characters. It made it into my rotation. It wasn't like the first thing, though, all the time. But what about you? What was like your first exposure was toys, too? And how did that start out?
It's really hard. And again, I'm kind of stealing this question a little bit from my Star Wars story. This is how Scott pretty much begins each of his interviews, which is just, it's a fantastic question. For all the episodes I listened to, it's been people who saw the film back in 77. And that's probably a very, you know, very clear memory. I don't have a very vivid first memory. All I know is like I have like a bunch of kind of fuzzy memories of my older cousin. He always had he had a bunch of the toys, a bunch of the vintage toys. And this, I was probably around the same age you were, Jason, probably 7, maybe 8. Probably more like 8 because the new figures came out when I was 10 and I was already into Star Wars by that point. But it wasn't my first exposure, it was a little bit earlier and I was playing with these old vintage toys and I liked to just play with the toys cause they were fun. And there was something different about them. There was something mysterious about them. Because like at that time, I liked Batman. I liked the Turtles. I liked Ghostbusters. Those were my three big things. And like you said, kind of Star Wars worked its way into that rotation. But I think there was this sense of mystery to the toys because I didn't have any of these toys at all. I did not have one Star Wars toy. I had yet to see a Star Wars movie for I don't know how long it was until I finally saw it. Because The Empire Strikes Back was the first one I saw. But I'd played with these toys for a little bit beforehand, but they were... My cousin had this really cool little back room in the house that he lived in growing up. It was this really, it was kind of a dark room and his Star Wars toys were in this very dark closet. And, you know, I normally think kids are afraid of the dark, but no, it was like so exciting. Like he'd open up all these dark spaces and pull out his box of Star Wars toys. And the one I loved the most was the Rancor. I loved his Rancor, the Return of the Jedi 83 vintage Rancor. And like I said, we would throw like Ewoks down its throat all the time
and lose them.
And I think you could get them out the bottom. Somebody I think said that on one of the shows, but it was just so fun. It was just something so much different from anything else that I had. But I certainly like, I wasn't in love with it at that point. And even the first time I saw The Empire Strikes Back, I really liked the beginning, but I was really bored during a lot of the middle. But I really liked the ending. Now it's actually funny. I think the second movement of Empire Strikes Back is like one of my favorite things in Star Wars, but, it piqued my interest very quickly. Were you 7 when the special editions came out?
I was, 7, going to be 8. Okay. Cause they came out like January, February, and March, I believe.
Of 97, right?
Of 97. Yeah. Yeah. And I turned 8 that May, so I was still 7. But yeah, which is like a great age to get introduced to Star Wars.
Absolutely, and that's the age so many of these like hardcore fanboys got into it in the '70s. You know,
right. But yeah, and like I said before, I liked it and worked its way into my rotation. And we got the VHS tapes, and I remember, you know, watching it, you know, so it was a big event when I get to put one in because they were so long, you know, so much longer than any of the other movies we had. And so we had to make sure that there was time. And so it's a big event when I got to watch Star Wars. It started to like surpass other things in my, you know, my rotation. It got more frequent and a little more higher up on the list. And after we saw Return of the Jedi, I remember distinctly my dad saying, well, you know, they're going to make some new ones that take place before these movies. But since they have to make them, it's going to take them longer for it to get out in theaters. And so I remember going, oh, well, when's it going to come out? And my dad was like, well, in about 2 years. I was like, 2 years? That's forever. Right. You know? But then it was after watching The Phantom Menace, I started to find all of the Star Wars novels at the library. It was after The Phantom Menace. And I found the big DK, like, visual guide books and stuff like that. And then I just went on the you know, computer catalog and searched Star Wars. And I was like, oh, there's all this other stuff? And I literally think I read just about every Star Wars book in the San Antonio Public Library system by the time Revenge of the Sith came out. And it was that period right after The Phantom Menace, before Attack of the Clones came out, that I would say I really fell in love with Star Wars for the first time, because that was when I really started doing the collecting. That was when I really started, you know, diving into the expanded universe and all these other things and investigating, you know, everything about the characters in the movies and, you know, these sort of things. That would be, you know, when I would first say I fell in love with Star Wars. So what about you? You know, you saying it was building, you know, was it when the special editions came out when you fell in love, or was it a little bit later?
You know, I think it was a little bit earlier than that, to be honest.
Oh.
I'm going to read something real quick.
Sure.
All right. I'm going to abridge it a little bit. All right. Nothing is more practical than falling in love. What you are in love with, what seizes your imagination, will affect everything. It will decide what you get out of bed for in the morning, what you do with your evenings, how you spend your weekends, what you read, whom you know, what breaks your heart, and what amazes you with joy and gratitude. That's a it's a poem by a Jesuit priest about falling in love. I omitted some of the God language, but but it's I think it's a very beautiful way about describing what it's like to be in love. And granted, yes, it's Star Wars, it's not a relationship, but I think in a sense it kind of works here because we really are in love. And I think that idea of like what am I thinking of when I get up in the morning? What do I do on my weekends? What am I doing with my evenings? Who do I hang out with? What am I reading? Like, that's a really good way of structuring it, because I think for me, you know, I started playing with these toys. I really liked them, and I saw the movies. And like I said, I didn't actually have them on VHS until I think 96. There was probably like a 6-month period where I was really starting to like Star Wars before I even owned the movies. And like I've talked about on previous shows, like they would always play them on Sci-Fi at Christmas time. So, you know, we'd be like decorating the tree while Empire and Jedi were on. I never saw A New Hope until like shortly before the special editions. you know, I was still playing with other action figures at the time. I think by like 93 Jurassic Park came out. I had a lot of Jurassic Park toys and I was playing dinosaurs and stuff.
Nice.
And I was still playing Ghostbusters a little bit at the time, running around the house with my proton pack. But all those things I just kind of like set aside. There was something about Star Wars though. When I played Star Wars, I really felt like I was invested in something different. And like, this is not language I used as a 7, 8-year-old, 9-year-old child, of course. This is me looking back and reflecting on it. But it really was it was kind of like my first really experience of being taken outside of myself. I mean, because of who I am and because of my own identity, I describe it as a religious experience. Star Wars started to pique my interest in my own religion. Like, I grew up Catholic and we were going to church all my life. And there was this feeling of mystery that just made sense to me in Star Wars. And it was just something that kind of like pulled me out of myself and really made me feel part of something bigger. And that's when I think I knew that, I think that's when I started to fall in love, was it was just so much more distinct from anything else I played. Like, I'd grab a Batman toy and play for a little while, or grab some of my Ghostbusters action figures and play under my bed. But when I would grab my Star Wars toys, when I knew it was like, I think it was like right around 95. I was probably about 10 years old. And it was when they started, you know, the Power of the Force 2 line with all the jacked, the action figures. but like, as those were coming out, just this dedication to buying them. Like, Batman toys, other toys, like, yeah, I liked getting them. But there was this dedication, right? And like, I've talked about this before too, right? I'd call Toys R Us to make sure they had the toy I wanted next. Have them hold it so I'd go in and get it. And it was like when I would pull that, you know, at starters, like the very small little cardboard box I had, which then became a bigger box, which then became a big plastic bin, right? Like, as you get more and more, the container gets larger. But as I would pull that out from under my bed, I would not start pulling the toys out to play until I went over to my tape player or CD player. By this time, I think it was a CD player, and I would put in my Oh, it's Jason's lightsaber.
Sorry.
I would put in, you know, a Star Wars soundtrack, set the mood, and then I could start playing. I think that it was just the way I played Star Wars was so much distinctly different from the way I was playing anything else as a kid. I set the mood with music. Whenever I would grab a novel, and like, right, the expanded universe was ramped up by that time. I was, you know, the Jedi Academy trilogy was just come out, and I was all about it. I would be laying on my bed with my headphones on, with my huge Walkman and my Star Wars soundtracks playing.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, whenever I was doing something Star Wars, I had to set the mood. There was something distinct about this to anything else I did.
Right.
And I noticed that as I was getting up in the morning, I would think about like, ooh, how am I going to play with my toys today? Or I'd go to school and I'd be like drawing little, I was a horrible drawer, but I would still try drawing little sketches of like what my figures would be doing when I get home. The only thing I could kind of draw was the Boba Fett helmet. And a TIE Fighter, because those aren't too bad.
The TIE Fighter. The TIE Fighter was so easy. I was a horrible artist as well. But I could draw a TIE Fighter coming straight at you, you know.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's easy. I drew a lot of really weird-looking Millennium Falcons. I tried real hard. But my
X-Wings were so wonky. I had to have an X-Wing to fight the TIE Fighters, but they just never turned out right.
Yeah. I hear you. But... you know, I think it was at that point where that's where I started to fall in love, was the fact that it just seized my imagination. It grabbed all of me, and I just wanted to be as invested to it as I could. And, you know, I can remember, I used to do this all the time, and I think I've shared this little story too, but whenever I'd sleep over at my cousin's, and literally at this point, you know, by 95, when these new figures were coming out, even though we didn't often play with the Star Wars action figures, my cousin and I, he and I would always like, we called it Big Star Wars and Little Star Wars. Little Star Wars meant we were playing with our figures. Big Star Wars meant like we were playing. And I would spend like every weekend there, and all we would do is play Star Wars. That's it. You know, we no longer played Ghostbusters. We no longer played Turtles. It was just Star Wars. And I would distinctly remember going to bed at night. I would sleep in the sleeping bag on the floor between my two cousins' beds. And I would slowly zip it up after they fell asleep, pretending I was being frozen in carbonite. And I'd be like, and I'd like freeze myself in the Han Solo position. And I'm like, okay, I'm obsessed. Or I started to pretend that I was on the torture rack, which is really messed up. But started young, folks.
Well, then.
But like, I would, you know, me and my cousin, we'd be up late at night. And I would just be asking, like my older cousin, his name's Ricky. He's only a few years older than I, but, you know, when you're a kid and you're, you know, 9 or 10 and somebody's 13 or 14.
Oh my gosh. They're that's a like god. So old.
Yeah. They're like a god. So I would be up all night asking Ricky questions, be like, wait, so why did Luke Skywalker do this? Or the most common question is, why were they torturing Han Solo? or like, you know, what did Luke mean when he says this place feels familiar, right? Like basically I was asking Larry inquiries at age 9. But, you know, and like he would respond, and I was just so riveted. And there was just something about Star Wars that it just heightened my imagination, and it seized it and it held it. And even like my dedication to those action figures, like, yeah, it definitely waned. Like I wasn't, you know, by the time Phantom Menace came out, I wasn't really playing with them anymore. I was about 14, going on 15 at that point. I still loved them, but there was still that dedication. It was like Star Wars was now implanted in my life. That is goofy as it sounds, but that little action of pretending to freeze myself in carbonite in that sleeping bag every weekend, I think in a sense that was almost symbolic of the fact that I was being frozen into Star Wars. Like it was building up around me, and I was loving it.
Nice. Nice.
So yeah, I don't know. It was just this natural progression. I think it was so much more distinct than anything else going on in my life at that time. There was just something about Star Wars that was different. And it's, again, I'm sorry to be corny, but it's to compare that to like falling in love with a person, you know, it's just kind of, you can have tons of lovely friends in your life, but there's sometimes just that one friend that stands out who you eventually fall in love with. And it's because there's just something distinct about them that just grabs all of you. And it just, that's where you know, that's where your devotion is. And I think that's what Star Wars did to me with all my other interests as a kid. We all had interests as children that we no longer, you know, are enthralled by.
Right.
But there was something about Star Wars that just implanted itself into me. and haven't been the same since.
Yeah, no, I agree. Even as a kid, you know, after seeing Star Wars, I knew it was different. It was so different from everything else. And I think that's why it was such like a big deal to me, because, you know, we watched, my mom would get the Disney movies as they come out for us, and we watched the heck out of a bunch of Disney animated movies. But then, of course, Star Wars was different, and so it had to be a big deal when we watched it, which is why I'd often have like one of my toys or something while I watched it or something like that. Or when I played with it, when I played Star Wars, I had to get all of them out, because that was, you know, you had to do that, you know, it was that sort of thing. But yeah, there was definitely something different about Star Wars. It felt like there was more freedom with playing Star Wars, because, you know, while there was, you know, at least for me at the time, a limited number of characters that you could, you know, either portray or play with or whatever, the stories were limitless. As long as it involved the good guys and the bad guys and the conflict that happened between them, the story could do anything, you know, which was amazing and so much fun for me. But yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. It was a bit limitless, you know?
Yeah.
That's really cool.
So you had a question you wanted to sort of wrap this up with. Did you want to get to that now, or did you want to?
Yeah, let's do that. So yeah. I just, you know, our love of Star Wars has obviously affected us. We could go on and on about how it has over the years, but that's not the idea. But I think just what is it? What has your love of Star Wars kind of given you?
My love of Star Wars, goodness, there's so much.
Mm-hmm. I know, right?
First and foremost, it's given me a bunch of great friends. You know, you being one of them.
Okay.
But I mean, I think it's probably one of the most unexpected things about Star Wars. You know, my love for Star Wars is that, you know, I've made these great friendships. But it's one of the most dear things to me right now. The other thing for me, at least, that's very, you know, important is the fact that, you know, if it weren't for, you know, diving into the inspiration behind Star Wars, I would have never really, you know, figured out that I wanted to get my minor in, you know, classics, you know, mythology and epic poetry and stuff like that from the ancient Greeks and the ancient Romans. I would have never found out that I loved that stuff. So, you know, it's sort of shaped a little bit of, you know, my desire for a career, because I wanted to be an actor so I could be in Star Wars. So I could use a lightsaber on screen. That was as a kid, after I figured out I wanted to be an actor, I was like, oh, then I could be in Star Wars. That was sort of like, you know, the thing that that sealed the deal for me about being an actor. I loved it. I liked being on stage and stuff. But then I was like, oh, I could be an actor. I could be in Star Wars. And this is, of course, right around the time Revenge of the Sith is getting ready to come out. So there's, like, on the horizon, no real opportunity for me to be an actor in Star Wars. But that was the mind of me at the time. I was like, that could happen. That could happen, you know, with no actual, you know, foreseeable future in sight with that. But now, of course, that dream is rekindled with all the new stuff coming out. And I'm like, I could be an actor. I could be in Star Wars, you know? and of course, voice acting in Rebels or something now for me is like, that would be incredible. But yeah, that's sort of where it's got me right now is, you know, career, education, and friends sort of are all impacted and by my love for Star Wars there. So
mm-hmm.
What about you?
Great. That's great. Well, I think the main thing is how it's drawn out my creativity. This podcast nice. Being the main example. Now, granted, I know tons of people have Star Wars podcasts. So that's not a unique skill to me. But, you know, that's not something I would have ever imagined. Even all through high school and college, I loved Star Wars, but I never thought of doing something with it. And I think my love of Star Wars has increased as a result, because, you know, I'll be a little corny here. Might have been real corny tonight, aren't we, Carl? you know, Jesus says in the gospel, if you have a light and a lamp, you should not hide it under a basket, but you should put it upon a lampstand so that all can see. My love of Star Wars, for the longest time, I kind of kept it under wraps, right? Because it wasn't cool for so long or whatever. But now,
Or you didn't have a lot of friends.
I still don't. I still don't really have any close vicinity friends who like Star Wars. Mm-hmm. But I have found a community in which I do. And that's as a result of my creativity. Once I put my love out there, you know, and went to fan days and met other people with these passions, I found a way to actualize that love.
Nice.
Of making it concrete even now. This is how I play Star Wars now. Like, I don't really get out the toys and play with them anymore. I just don't. I still love having the toys around. Like, I have a bunch right here as I'm recording. but
my entire collection is in a bunch of bins right over next to my desk.
Jason was using the Force earlier to pull them to his hand. It was pretty great. You know, it's given me this great outlet for being creative, which I really appreciate. And then, like you said too, Jason, you know, it's got me some really close and dear friends. Of course, you being one of them. You know, that's the thing about Star Wars is that it's really created so many strong friendships. And even when I was a kid, I fell in love with it because of my cousins who I loved very dearly and wanted to be close to them. So this was a point of connection. And the last thing is Star Wars for much of my life by the time Phantom Menace had come out, my cousins weren't as crazy about it as I was. We weren't really playing with the toys anymore. And we all just kind of like went our separate ways at that point in life. So I still love Star Wars. They still loved it, but not as nearly as much as I did. And none of my friends did. And it was like, I got picked on. That's when I was never like bullied, but you know, you got picked on for it. So I just kind of like shut down. I put my little basket over that lamp for a number of years. But the thing that I liked about it though, and the only goodness I see in that was my like it was like my little secret. And anybody that I got close to, whether it was a friend or like a girl I liked, if I disclosed to them my love for Star Wars and they accepted it, I could like them forever. it was kind of just like my little secret. Whereas now it's like anytime I go on a date, any girl like I'm seeing right off the bat, they know I love Star Wars. That's one of the first things I bring up.
It's one of those things, you know, one of the first things you ask is, so what's your favorite movie?
Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back. What's yours? Actually, let me tell you my thoughts on this. Here's a business card. you should like us on Facebook. It's no longer something I'm ashamed of, but it is, though, something I still hold very dear to me. And when somebody I really care about appreciates that love, it makes me love them even more because it's something that is so close to me. So it's kind of a measuring stick in a way, I guess, of some of my relationships. Not to say like, oh, I mean, literally every one of my friends in Boston could care less about Star Wars. They don't hate it or anything. They don't care for it. That does not affect the fact that they are really good friends. But some of my closest friends, you know, like some other people, Joe Hogan and like, that really love Star Wars, there's a different type of connection I can have with you because we share the same mutual love.
Right.
The love of Star Wars has done nothing but add to my life. So, and I remember, just a quick little side tangent, I remember Steve Glosson talking about this at C6 a few years ago. I'm pretty sure it was Steve, talking about how he doesn't like the idea of people talking about being obsessed with Star Wars because he doesn't like the idea of being obsessed. Like, obsession seems to imply something negative.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why I prefer, I'm in love with Star Wars. I'm not obsessed. Mm-hmm. I'm in love with it. Because love requires faithfulness. Like, I'm faithful to these films. Dedication. I am dedicated to my love for it. And I'm dedicated to it because of how it brings people together. Right? Like, that's something to celebrate. Hence, celebration.
There we go.
Anyway. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. And so, why don't, you know, folks, if you want to share with us your, you know, when you knew you were in love with Star Wars, you know, feel free to drop us a line on Facebook or Twitter or email, and we'll give you all those information later.
Yeah. You were about to be put to death in a Geonosis arena, and you were like, there's nothing to lose. I'm going to confess my love. You know what I'm saying? Quietest line.
I love you, know what I'm saying.
Quietest line in Star Wars. you know, you love me? She's like,
yes.
Yeah.
Before we die.
I want you to know. It's like, what? Huh? It was like it's confusing for people in 1983 when Yoda was like, another sky.
What?
Like, what? There's another what?
It's another one? What? You want
who now?
You want to try enunciating that line?
Jar Jar's here? What? What? I'm lost. Misa here, Luke. Oh damn.
Oh, boy. But we promised that we'd get to some of your Larian inquiries.
But we lied. Show. So this will do this episode of the one. I'm just kidding. Yes, we did promise, and we are men of our word.
Yes. Yes.
Just like Luke was when he said, he promises Yoda when he's leaving Dagobah, I promise, I'll be back. He came back, you know what I'm saying.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yes. Yeah. Luke's like, so I'm coming back, Yoda, yeah. All right, sorry.
So do you just want to do these in order, or did you want to just sort of pick and choose some of these things?
I'm going to pick and choose a few. If we get through them all, great. I don't think we'll get through them all tonight, which is fine. We'll keep them on the back burner. But I'm going to pick out a few real quick.
Okay.
Is that okay?
That's fine with me.
I'm going to lead the charge here, Jason.
All right.
I'm going to be the Jar Jar to your Captain Tarples. No giving up, General Jar Jar. We still think of something.
Hands up. I give up.
Oh.
Okay. Right, let's jump into these.
All right. So our first one tonight comes from Lenny Klein. He said, why did the officer on the Death Star, Admiral Motti, taunt Vader about the Force being old and useless and somewhat fake when you'd think it would be known that Vader liked to telekinetically choke people out, which proves the Force does exist? Was it that he never met Vader before? Had Vader and his deeds become some sort of legend to some? It's a good question.
It is a good question.
That is a good question, because it's like, why would he taunt him? Like, why are you getting all up in his face? You want to take the first stab?
Sure. Well, the thing is Admiral Motti isn't someone who's on the front lines. And as we saw at the beginning of A New Hope, Vader doesn't necessarily always choke other people out telekinetically. I mean, he grabs Captain Antilles by the throat and lifts him, you know, through brute force to strangle him and kill him. So... and Admiral Motti doesn't generally see these things because they're, you know, they don't walk in the same circles most of the time. Vader is there because he's on the mission to get the plans back for the Death Star, and Motti is part of Tarkin's crew that's leading the Death Star. So maybe they haven't met before. I mean, they probably know each other by reputation. But obviously, Admiral Motti is just an arrogant old fool, and decides that the Force is you know, extinct and, you know, ancient religion sort of thing, and Vader has to show him that he's wrong. Yeah. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So,
I think kind of backing you up there a little too. I think to a certain degree that the Vader we see in A New Hope is a very different Vader than we see in Empire.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that is because of the fact that Vader isn't – like, he's not second in command necessarily. He's kind of the Emperor's, you know, lackey. But, like, clearly Grand Moff Tarkin is his superior, you know. And I think this meeting that they have there that Motti is present at is – it's a high-ranking Imperial – officers meeting where all of them in a sense kind of outrank Vader, I think there's a certain level of arrogance to Motti that he doesn't think Vader's going to really do anything because I'm Admiral Motti,
right?
You know,
Vader's just the Emperor's enforcer,
right? He doesn't necessarily at this point, it's not clear that he has a position in the military bureaucracy. So I think Motti's just I think he's basically just he's being your typical arrogant person who's just saying, the heck with this stupid Force stuff. Like, that doesn't give you any real power, you know. What gives us real power is, you know, the power of this station, right? Like, I think it's typical human hubris. And Vader's just kind of showing him, like, don't be so sure.
Right.
So, but, yeah, good question, Lenny.
Yes.
We have two questions from Jackson Alonzo.
Yes.
And his first one, he says, do you think Darth Vader relates or talks to his stormtroopers because they both know what it feels like to wear armor?
Do you want to take this first or shall I?
I'll let you do this one first again.
Okay. I would say probably not, because Vader and the stormtroopers have very different experiences when it comes to armor. The stormtrooper can go home at the end of the day and take it off. Vader can't. The armor is keeping Vader alive. And so Vader probably just hates stormtroopers because they have that ability. And so they're probably just below him to talk to him, to talk to about that sort of thing. Vader is not really like Anakin was with his troops. Anakin, obviously, very, on the front lines, got the respect of a lot of his clones. Vader, he does the job. He does the job very well, but he doesn't care if you're in the way. He will get rid of you too. So the stormtroopers probably respond more out of fear to Vader than any sort of actual respect.
Yeah. I would say the same thing. I think Vader isn't one for compassion and empathy.
No.
And if you've been reading the new Marvel Star Wars run, in the very first issue of Marvel Star Wars, a little spoiler alert here, it's not a big one, but there is a scene where Vader lifts up a stormtrooper to take a blast, so that like a sniper is trying to shoot at Vader, and he lifts up a stormtrooper to take the blast.
Oh.
So like he clearly doesn't care about the stormtroopers.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a really cool scene. and I agree, like your point, like Anakin was much different. I think he would have talked to the clone troopers, not because of any empathy about the armor stuff, but yeah, no, I don't think Vader has any compassion for them. And like you said too, Jason, like they are not required to wear it to live.
Right.
They can take it off at the end of the day. So take a dip in the blue milk tank. anyway, Jackson has another question. He says, I happen to be Catholic like you guys, although Jason is not Catholic. He is something else, pagan.
Like Protestant? Yeah, is no. that the right? Yeah, I don't know. Sure. I don't Jason's really pay Christian. Attention to the different.
Yeah, we're both Christian. I do yes. happen to be Catholic, though. But he says, I was wondering, do you think George Lucas modeled the Jedi robes off of Catholic priest robes? So I'm going to take this one, Jason, first.
Yes, you take this first.
I don't think specifically, no. I don't think so at all. But I think he is, going after that monastic look. And that could be Catholic monks, Buddhist monks wear robes as well. Hindu monks wear robes. You know, all sorts of religious denominations have monastic orders that wear lots of robes. Catholic priests really only wear robes when they're doing a mass. They don't walk around in those things. But like for monks, be it like a Catholic monk or a Buddhist monk, they walk around in those robes all the time because it's not just something they wear for ceremony. It's what they wear to say who they are. And I think the same is true of Jedi. They wear something very distinct. And I think George Lucas wasn't modeling it specifically after Catholic priests or anything, but I think he was keeping in mind a monastic sense of like, these are kind of the religious folk of the Star Wars universe. And we should have them dress in such a way that their way of dressing says who they are, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Jedi are very much modeled after the medieval ideas of knighthood and samurai, English medieval knights and Japanese medieval samurai. And so I think the robes definitely hint at, medieval monks or, Buddhist monks, those types of things. I do agree. It's more of a monastic inspiration than a priestly inspiration. Although some of Palpatine's robes might have had some slight priestly inspiration when he was Supreme Chancellor.
Right. And he's much more ceremonial.
Right. Right. So, but yeah, that was a
good question.
It's a good question.
Yeah. So.
Do we have time for one more? Or
yeah, we got time for one more. This one comes from, it's a Twitter one from @JediRG. I could be saying that wrong. I apologize. But this is a good question. It says, what if Padme had been another Jedi Padawan instead of a politician? Now, I'm going to take this question a certain way. I don't know if this is what you exactly mean, and maybe you can help me clarify too, Jason.
I think this came in response to you and Joe's podcast about the prequel stuff.
So that makes me wonder if it's implying that, like, had, you know, again, Padme and Anakin still fall in love, but instead of her being a politician, she's also another Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming that's
probably the case.
Which is what I'm assuming, which I think is really cool. so I have quite a few thoughts, Jason. Do you want to go first or shall I?
Sure. I'll go first because I feel like you're going to have a lot more to say about this. not that I wouldn't. I just haven't thought about it as long as you have.
I'm in control of the board over here. I know it's not fair.
I think it would have been really interesting. And it would have really played up the whole Jedi have no attachments thing, because not only would Anakin be breaking that, but so would Padme. And it would have been cool to see, you know, Padme with a lightsaber too. I mean, come on. Natalie Portman, when they were filming Attack of the Clones, in an interview, she says, you know, everybody gets all these cool lightsabers, and here I am with these giant, like, hair dryers. You know, she's like, man, I want a lightsaber. So I think that would have been cool to see if Padme had a lightsaber. It would have been really interesting. I think we would have had to have had Obi-Wan maybe be a knight or a master, and Padme the apprentice, and they go and end up on Tatooine. Or maybe Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon are teamed up with another Jedi master and apprentice, and Padme is that apprentice, and they, you know, they travel to do the mission that way. But it would have been interesting. I think it would have been really interesting. That would have been – definitely would have changed, I think, the tone of it, and you'd have to have something else in there to get the political ideas across, because we don't have a connection directly to the politics in the Senate without Padme. But it would have been really interesting. What do you think?
I think this is a great question. I think that had she been a Jedi Padawan, that's like a really cool idea, because it's first off, it makes for a more natural connection. Like, he could have known her for a lot longer, which is kind of nice. And I think, too, that it would have been really cool to see two Jedi kind of breaking their promises of no attachment. I think that just kind of ups the scandal, but makes it a lot more interesting. And it makes Anakin even that much more understandable, relatable, the fact that he's not the only one who feels this way. Although I will say, I did love that the arc at the beginning of season 5 of Clone Wars, where Ahsoka's kind of got a little thing for that one character. I don't remember who it is, but
Lex Bonteri.
That's right. And Anakin, like, kind of has that little conversation with her. I thought that was really good. But I think that's really cool. And here's also why, because I'm just going to stretch it a tiny bit. I've been thinking about this a lot lately, actually, of how one of the things I wish they hadn't done with Anakin Skywalker's character in the prequels is make him into this chosen one. We don't necessarily get any of this, like, huge prophetic stuff in the OT, where, like, Anakin was some big prophetic character who, like, needed to bring balance to the Force. I think that overhypes Anakin's character for the PT. Now, granted, I think it's important for a lot of the character development we get of him as it is, right? Because it's, like, all this weight on him, all this weight on his shoulders, great deal of responsibility. It's part of the reason he cracks under all this pressure. But I think it would have been really cool had you not done that. It's just some normal, everyday Jedi who, you know, just kind of – he just falls, and his fall becomes catastrophic. But here's what would have been cool. Like, imagine he and Padme have Luke and Leia, and they're the chosen ones, because it's these two very powerful Jedi who have children.
Mm.
I think that would have been really cool, making – if you want to do any sort of chosen one thing, it could have been like Luke and Leia rather than the Anakin Vader thing, because I think – I don't know. It just puts too much weight on it. I just think Anakin's story would have been far more engaging had it not just been constantly focused on this prophecy that, in my humble opinion, never really gets clarified. the balance of the Force thing, like, we've all got our, you know – our understandings of what that means. We've all made sense of it for ourselves, but I don't think it was a necessary plot point. It could have been a far more human story if it was just a normal, powerful Jedi who falls. That's all. Doesn't need to have some huge prophecy to it. Because I think that makes it, I mean, I get to some degree writing wise, I'm way off topic now, but, writing wise, I think that makes sense because you're trying to write like this big grand sweeping tragedy, like in the days of yore, like some, you know, ancient Greek tragedy. But I think it would have just been far more human had Anakin just been your average Jedi. Yes, he's a gifted Jedi. He's a powerful Jedi, but there's not all this, like, you know, prophecy of the one who will bring balance to the Force. Like, I don't know. Maybe that over mythologized it. Maybe, I don't know. My opinion. Just some thoughts in light of that really cool question.
Yeah.
So,
although I for one don't think you can over mythologize anything.
good point.
Just real quick, one last thought about this. The only thing that, you know, as I'm thinking about this idea, the only thing that you would have had to really work hard to try and figure out what to do with is once Padme as a Jedi is pregnant.
Yeah.
How do you hide that? Because she's on missions, you know, she's, you know, doing work for the Jedi. She's, you know, on the front lines perhaps and pregnant with twins at the same time doing that might be a little bit problematic because you need to have her give birth to Luke and Leia at the end of it. That's something that it would have just been an interesting problem to try and figure out. That's one possibility of maybe why she wasn't a Jedi, is how do you get her off the front lines? How do you hide the fact that she's pregnant when she's a Jedi in these robes that, while they flow, aren't exactly conducive to hiding a bulging twin pregnant belly?
Right, right.
So
that's a good point.
But yeah, as we were talking, that was the only big problem I had with that I could see with that idea. But it's a really interesting thought. Absolutely. To run down, you know, how could have it been different, you know, if Padme was a Jedi, and how would have that changed the OT, you know, because it would have had a different impact on the OT, you know, if Padme was a Jedi too. So
yeah, absolutely.
But anyway, awesome.
Yeah, great question.
So, are we getting ready to wrap this up then?
I think we shall. We have a few others, but they're a little bit more involved, so we'll tackle those a little bit later on.
Yes.
So,
real quick, before we start wrapping stuff up, I do want to let everybody know we had Riley Blanton on the show a couple months ago, and he was letting us know that the Star Wars Report was on hiatus at the time. Well, in case you haven't noticed, Star Wars Report is back. So, if you took a break from checking their feed for a while, you should go back. They have an awesome interview with Steven Stanton, who voices Tarkin in Clone Wars and Rebels. That's pretty cool stuff. But for our next episode, we have a new poll.
Mm-hmm. We sure do.
And the poll, we're getting back to these things. I almost forgot how to do this. A new poll is, what is your favorite original trilogy lightsaber duel? And if you want to respond to that or let us know how you fell in love with Star Wars or respond to anything else we talked about, send in a Larian inquiry. Where can they do that, Carl?
They can do it on Facebook, facebook.com/WampusLairPodcast. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/WampusLair. You can send us an email at wampuslerpodcast@gmail.com, or you can find us over at starwarsreport.com, along with all the other fine podcasts from the 2nd Airborne Division.
Yes. Yes. And we're getting closer to Celebration, and Carl and I this weekend got our custom-made Wampus Lair t-shirts that we're going to be parading around the convention, so you'll be able to find us easier. But I know there's some podcasts out there that are, you know, like to make t-shirts for their listeners to purchase or have. We're not going to be doing that. If you want to have a Wampus Lair t-shirt, just go ahead and go to our Facebook page and copy and download one of our prints that you like, and go ahead and take that to a custom t-shirt website. We don't We don't care if you do that. That's awesome. It'd be kind of cool to see some other Wampus Lair t-shirts around the convention that we didn't make.
Yeah, that would make my day. Yeah, that'd be so cool. And the reason we're not making them to sell, just so you know, is we're pretty much under the impression that like we can't sell something with Star Wars words or images on it because we don't own that property. I don't know what the other podcasts are doing. I don't care. It's not here to pass the judgment, but I would just be too nervous to print something that says Wampa's Lair. Wampa is a licensed word, and it's now owned by Disney, who is probably even scarier than Lucasfilm. So it's not, and we're not doing this to make money anyway. Like, And this is in no way me passing judgment on anybody else that does that. I would love to do it. I'm just too afraid of the risk. Maybe these people figured all that stuff out and they're fine. They're good to go. I don't want to do the work for that. Also, we're not here to make money anyway. We just want to have fun. But we would love it if you guys wanted to make a Wampa's Lair t-shirt. Joe Hogan, of course, would be honored to know that his, images that he makes for us are being used by other people too. I mean, these are some great prints he's done over the years.
Yeah.
Carl and I
made ours through imprint.com. Yep. So yep. If you're curious, they have a bunch of great options. But of course, there's also other places like Zazzle and I'm sure a bajillion other custom t-shirt websites that you could take this to.
Oh yeah. Yeah, there's so many out there. You guys, it's so easy. But yeah, Jason told me about Imprint because they were running like a real deal, like a real special. I think both of us, for both of my t-shirts, I got a little bit more than Jason. I got some writing on the back of mine too, but they were like less than $20.
So. Yeah. I think including all the shipping and handling, I spent like $20 or something. It was awesome. Ridiculously good for two t-shirts. So,
right. Yeah.
One final thing before we wrap this up. I will be, later on this year, close to the beginning of summer, I'm going to be starting a Doctor Who podcast called Talking Time Lords. It's going to be a lot of fun, but I need a co-host. And next week for me is spring break, so I'm going to start the vetting process to try and find a co-host. So if any of our Larians out there are fans of Doctor Who and think it would be fun to do a Doctor Who podcast, go ahead and email the show, wampuslarpodcast@gmail.com, or get in touch with me on Facebook or something, and let me know. And I'll add you to the list of people that I start, talking to and see what the case is. So I'm hoping to get an episode produced by like the beginning of May, because I will be going to Phoenix Comic Con Memorial Day weekend and want to promote the show there. We will see what happens. So that's the plan. It won't get really ramped up until after I graduate mid-May, just so you know. But I'm starting the process of getting it together, and Michael Cohen is helping me out with that too. So he's an awesome guy, so make sure you go and listen to all his podcasts. But anyways, any other final thoughts before we wrap up this episode, Carl?
I'm all set.
You are all set. Well, thank you everybody for listening to this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This has been episode number 121. You love me? For Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.